Hello and welcome to Minbar. I'm your host, Ahmed Hanif. When we hear of human rights, usually the only idea that comes to mind is the Human Rights Charter of the United Nations, or in short, the Western concept of human rights. This is emphasized by the claim to universality, that is, it is applicable to all places and even cultures. Now, Muslims also claim that Islam has a concept of human rights that has been overlooked and even ignored. So what is the Islamic concept of human rights? How different is it from the Western concept? To discuss these questions, we are joined on Minbar with Masoud Shajare, Chair of the Islamic Human Rights Commission in the United Kingdom. Now, the Islamic Human Rights Commission in the United Kingdom is very active both within the country and outside, advocating for the rights of people whose rights have been denied or compromised. And they have published a lot of different publications. In addition to their newspaper, they have the British Muslim Expectation, the British Muslims Expectation of the Government, a series talking about hijab and Muslims under British law and so on. They also have, in the wake of the 9/11 incident in the United States and 7/7 in the UK, a little pamphlet that they give to other Muslims, know your rights, whenever they are probably arrested or stopped by the police. Also, they have a list of products that support Israeli apartheid. So it's a very, very active organization. Masoud, welcome to the show. Tell me a little bit more about the Islamic Commission on human rights.
Well, the Islamic Human Rights Commission is an advocacy, research, and campaigning organization, which, as you said, it deals with issues within Britain and Europe and also overseas. We used to deal around 80% of our effort and our resources used to go overseas, but in the last few years, that has actually become almost 50-50. Mm. That is because there is a huge problem within Europe and the West, the Islamophobia, demonization of Muslims, demonization of Islam itself. And you know, this whole industry that has been created to hammer Islam, Muslims, and so forth, the politics of fear, and so on. We have got many projects. We do reports on issues. We do reports on country base. We are got a consultative status at the United Nations.
Okay.
We take many issues down there. In last year alone, we've done 9 reports, which has been presented to UN. And we have actually spoken in the main assembly at Geneva 9 times as well.
So you're pretty active.
Well, alhamdulillah, is now, you know, it started around 11 years ago, and now it's actually become an institution which has resulted in being instrumental in freeing over 2,500 people from prisons across the world.
Interesting. Now, since you are involved in human rights activity, there is this claim by Muslims state that Islam also has a concept of human rights, which I think many people in the world are not aware of. Is there such a thing as Islamic human rights?
Yeah, I mean, of course there is. I think you know, really Muslims in some ways are divided into two groups. One group, they say there is no human right in Islam. Human right is hypocrisy and is a tool of the oppressors to actually get engaged and control the oppressed. Mm. And you know, in reality, that there is a level of truth to that. And then there is another group of people on the other extreme. They say that, you know, all we have to do is to take a universal declaration of human right and put Bismillah Rahman Rahim on top of it and becomes Islamic, you know. And you know, just give it a bit of massage here
right.
and there.
Like democracy and socialism.
Yeah, and then it becomes Islamic, you know, and everybody should accept it. Now, the reality is neither of these two. Mm-hmm. And the fact is that Islam does have a concept of human right. Islam indeed, you know, has got a concept of justice, which precedes the Western concept, mm-hmm. which was only came about after the World War II, and between World War I and World War II, and the Declaration of Human Rights is only 60 years old, mm-hmm. you know, and you know, it was this last year was celebrated at the same time that the State of Israel was celebrated, mm-hmm. which is an irony of the whole thing. But the fact is that in Islam, the concept of rights of neighbor, rights of children, rights of family, rights of parents, and indeed the whole Sharia, you know, concept is actually very much in place. And indeed, the difference, if there is a difference, is the fact that in Islam, the concept of human right is very much justice-based, mm-hmm. rather than being legalistic-based, that we know law and legal system does not always present justice, but in Islam, it's actually justice that is actually leads the legal concept.
Now, explain that a little bit more for me, more justice-based as opposed to legal-based, because when one hears about legal, you know, or legality, one thinks of justice, you know, one thinks of law, and law means justice. Now, what do you mean by the Islamic concept of human rights is more justice-based and the Western concept of human rights more legal-based?
Well, I mean, I'll give you an example. For example, you know, the whole basis of the sort of the concept of legality, which human rights comes from in the West, started from the concept of protecting the wealth of the wealthy and the landlords, mm. you know. And, you know, we have had the cases of people for stealing a loaf of bread were arrested and sent down to Australia. That's how we end up with all the Europeans in Australia, mm-hmm. and indeed the United States and so forth, on the basis of law which was there to protect property. Mm-hmm. Even now, the laws internationally are more concerned of protecting properties. And I'll give you an example. If you actually go and take a CD and copy it, or a video and so forth, you know, the companies, because of the loyalties, they actually will chase you all around the world. And, you know, it doesn't matter where in Europe you're trying to copy CDs and so forth, they come and get you, put you in prison, or, you know, they confiscate all the material. Mm. But you could actually go and commit genocide and live all around Europe still, and nobody touches you. United States says that the international courts of justice is not really feasible. But then nobody questions the international courts of protecting the wealth and the wealth of multinationals.
I see.
So really, we got more concerned, still even up to this day, with those who steal a loaf of bread mm-hmm. than those who committing genocide. Mm-hmm. You know, people who committed genocide at the time of Bosnia are still walking around. You know, people who committed acts of atrocity in Israel are coming back and forward into Europe, and nobody bothers to do anything. Those who committed even Rwandan genocide are really more or less have been left alone, with the exception of very few. But, you know, that is not the case for those who actually try to defraud their bank or defraud anything else, financial. You know, in Islam, the concept of human right goes to the ayah that how could you not rise and fight for sake of those oppressed men, women and children who are crying and saying, Ya Allah, send us a protector, send us a helper. Mm. The ayah does not even mean anything to do with them being Muslim or not.
Right.
You know, the oppressed and oppressor could be either Muslim or non-Muslim.
Exactly.
And you really stand against the oppressor, no matter who it is, in support of the oppressed. And Allah says, how could you not rise up and fight? Mm-hmm. Not rise up to send a couple of pounds, you know, put in the donation bar, but fight mm-hmm. for sake of
to defend them, to defend their rights.
Absolutely.
Yes.
To defend them and free them from the oppression. Right. And so that is the duty bound on us. You know, the other ayahs deal with when you see injustice. Be witness. Be witness against yourself, against your kin, against those who are rich, against those who are poor. So you've got to be witness against injustice, against wrongdoing, even if you've done it yourself.
In any circumstance.
In any circumstance.
So you're saying the Western idea of justice largely takes the role or takes the side of the property owners.
Yes. I mean, you know, at the moment I'm talking about the practice because, I think we shouldn't sort of mix up the practice and the principle. Mm. We should deal with both of it. Let me give you an example. At the time of the Hazrat Ali alayhi salam, we know the occasion when a Jewish person actually claimed that the armor of Hazrat Ali belongs to him and took the Amir al-Mu'mineen to court. Because he had a fabricated evidence and Amir al-Mu'mineen didn't have evidence on his side, he actually won the case. And the court, the judge, actually gave a verdict against Amir al-Mu'mineen right. in support of this person who was an outsider.
Okay, who was Amir al-Mu'mineen was the head of the Islamic State
yes.
at the time.
Yes, and then, you know, right. this was done even though the person was an outsider. Mm. Now let's compare that to today's, you know, champions of. Human rights. You know, United States claims to be champion of human rights. Do you remember Monica Lewinsky's
right.
case? You know, here the president has acted unlawfully in harassment of a young lady who was under his protection. And then when the courts wanted to deal with it, they said, well, we can't because the president has got immunity.
Mm.
In Islam, no one has got immunity
right.
for wrongdoing. No one. And if they do, they are behaving outside the protection of the Sharia. Even the head of the state doesn't have immunity.
Right.
Here, in the Western concept, who they claim to be, you know, everyone knew the president has committed a crime.
Right.
But he was protected against it because he had immunity. Now, you know, if we sort of take that, further, you know, how, you know, again, I want to use the example of Hazrat Ali alayhi salam. On the occasion, now is the month of Ramadan, on the occasion when he was attacked and eventually caused his death, when he was struck at the Fajr, and when they were bringing him out, the murderer to be was held, his hand tied, very mm-hmm. tight. And he turned around and looked at it. I mean, he's someone who's been, injured to the extent that he died from the injury. He turned around and looked at this man and said that loosen his hand. He was worried about the right of his murderer. Mm-hmm. He said, loosen his hand, and if I live, I will judge him. Not I will punish mm-hmm. him, I will judge him. If I didn't, judge him justly. Don't abuse him. If he was found guilty,
right.
if he was found guilty, not, you know, I mean, these are the people who saw the
right.
crime. If he was found guilty, kill him with one stroke.
Mm-hmm.
So if the murderer of Hazrat Ali has got right, then I will put to you that every person has got right in Islam,
yeah.
even those who commit acts of abomination.
Uh-huh. Like maybe assassinating, for example, the head of state or what have you.
They have got right.
Right.
And indeed, you know, one thing is very important in Islam, and I, you know, try to, I shouldn't overlook this, that in Islam, right carries responsibility. In Islam, it's always like mm. that. When you've got certain things, that thing actually carries also responsibility. Mm. When you are powerful, then you have the responsibility to look after the weak. When you have, you know, you have wealth, you actually have got responsibility to look after the poor. When you're educated, you got the responsibility of teaching to the
right.
uneducated. When you have these rights, you also have got responsibility. Responsibility and rights are hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
In the Western
or could we
culture,
say also then that people who have more power, others have more rights on them?
Yes, absolutely.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. That's why we hold mm-hmm. those with more power, more wealth, more responsible than someone who hasn't got power.
Now, somebody listening to what you're saying, okay, might say, well, how come in the Muslim world you have all these dictators? How come in the Muslim world you have all these atrocities? How come in the Muslim world you have all these injustices all over the country, and so forth? How could we answer this?
Well, this is what I was saying, that we need to separate the principle from the action. You know, I was comparing two actions before of what we talk about golden age of Islam and what they talk about the golden age of their human right, which is now. But, you know, then I'm now dealing with the concept. You know, on one side, the concept of is that, you know, rights carries responsibility. In Western concept, that's not the case. It's individual rights against the right of the community. In Islam, also the thing is the right of individual, which is goes under the protection of right of community. This basically right of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, right of the community, and right of individual in that order. But in the secular thing, it's actually right of individuals.
Over the right of the
over
community.
The right of everyone else, and right without any responsibilities. That's why now we get into a situation in the West that everybody has got right and nobody has got any responsibility. You know, the politicians are not held accountable, the teachers are not called accountable. They just, you know, they got right and they got right, but they don't have any responsibilities. But also, you know, I think it's very important that to recognize that yes, there are abuses. Principles have always been abused. But we do have a golden age when these principles were practiced. And we look back to that to bring that sort of justice back to our way of life. You know, then, you know, if we do that, then we're actually creating a better society for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Now, from where are the codes of rights in Islam taken from? What are the sources?
Well, like anything else, goes to the Quran and the Sunnah and the tradition and the practice that has taken place and the fiqh. You know, it really goes back into depth of that. The difficulty that is being faced by human rights activists like myself, from Islamic perspective, is that, you know, unlike other issues in Sharia, we don't have a bab of human rights, a book of human rights.
Article this and
It's sort of divided and it's put down there like there is in the Western concept that, you know, there is a different aspect of law and then there is a law of human rights, and the human rights is a specific section. And in many ways we have actually sort of failed to create that. I mean, up to now, I mean, this is why really up to now we don't have a realistic sort of declaration of human rights. And this is something that from the beginning, 11 years ago, IHRC has been sort of hoping that we'll achieve this eventually one day. But it's very important that if you're going to achieve this, it should stand on its own merits. Mm-hmm. It should not be part of, or what I said at the beginning, massaging the other concept and actually taking a bit out and a bit in and creating what is Islamic human right in the image of Western concept of human right. You know, there is another thing that is I forgot to mention wrong with the Western concept of human right is that in the Western concept of human rights, sometimes we see that a crime, is actually taken as right. You know, like adultery.
Uh-huh.
Adultery is taken as a right. You know, you can't have adultery as a right. You can't have murder as a right and then say this is a universal declaration. I mean, one of the problems is the universality.
That's interesting. Which Western country takes adultery as a right?
Well, they do, because you know, if in the West, if anyone commits adultery, then they are protected. There's no, they're protected as a right because they have got a right to commit adultery. You know, you can't really hold anyone accountable for committing adultery.
But isn't it like more like? People in the West tend to be against adultery, but they see it more in terms of a moral, akhlaqi type of thing.
No, they don't.
For example, a woman can get a divorce or a man can get a divorce on the basis of their spouse committing adultery, but it is not punishable.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, now it's even that aspect is going out of the window, because you could get divorced because your husband snores too much, so this is really bringing adultery to that level. But if you actually look at the society, definitely in Britain and indeed in France and elsewhere, those politicians who get involved in adultery, the popularity goes up. this is a reality. If you want to become popular, you just go and commit adultery. You say, he's a man of but it goes beyond that. It goes beyond that. Individual right to do anything. I'll give you an example. In United States, there was cases that feminists were taking a couple of shops and publishers to court, and they were trying to actually take them to court for the pornography which was being published and so forth. The companies and those shops actually seek protection under freedom of literature and freedom of expression. Mm-hmm. And the courts upheld the right under freedom of expression and freedom of the literature, and allowed them to go and publish further these pornographies. Now, where is the right of women to be protected against pornography?
Let's hold it right there, the rights of women.
Yes.
We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back after this news break. Stay tuned. Welcome back, and we are joined here with Dr. Masoud Shajareh, Chair of the Islamic Human Rights Commission in the United Kingdom. So we just ended up on the issue of women, how their rights in terms of pornography have been ignored with respect to the individual right of a seller of pornography to sell his material. Now, women's rights in Islam has usually been getting a bad rap in the press, in the Western press, also from the basis of the Western idea of human rights. The Westerners are saying that according to our understanding of human rights, women's rights are trampled upon in Islam. What is our response to that? Is this true?
Well, I think first of all we have to understand where the Westerners come from. I mean, it wasn't long ago, less than 100 years ago, that women in the West didn't even have the right of owning properties. All their property was a property of their husband or their fathers. They had no right to own property. And even now today, many of our viewers will be really shocked to find out that there are certain cantons in Switzerland which do not allow women to vote.
Really? But even now?
Even now. Uh-huh. These are not really taken up by those aggressive human rights campaigners or women's lib group, because it's something that within the Western sort of traditions and is tolerated. But Islam is being targeted by many people. First of all, I think we need to understand that, as I said from the beginning, rights goes with responsibility. So issues like inheritance, that women will get half of what a male child will get. Mm. But also women don't have that responsibility. When a man gets twice as much, he actually has got all the responsibility, because his money is not his, it's for the whole family.
Right.
While a woman's wealth is only for her. Even her husband has no right over her. She could give it to whoever she wants to, but no one has got right over that money of her. While the husband has actually responsibility for whole family. And so therefore, when you put it in that concept, the rights and responsibility, then you see the whole thing is much more balanced. But also, you know, another aspect people are taking the issue is the issue of hijab. I mean, and covering, modest dressing of a woman. They say that this is unjust because why should a woman wear a scarf and cover certain part when a man should not? As you know, modesty and hijab goes beyond just covering. There are many respect of hijab for men as well. Mm-hmm. You know, they lower the gaze and etc. Yeah. Which is very important, and it needs to go equally hand in hand. But also there is another aspect. The other aspect is that even in the Western societies, there is this differentiation between what level of clothing a man could wear in comparison to the level of clothing a woman. I mean, I'll give you an example of Britain. In Britain, United States, and many other parts of Western sort of civilization, a man could go out during the summer or any other time with just shorts on. But if a woman goes with shorts on with no cover on the top, she will be arrested. You know, that is shows again a sort of thing that a woman's level of standards of clothing is different to one of man.
What about certain atrocities that people tend to target? For example, honor killings in certain parts of the our world. A woman might get raped and she's killed by her family because of defending the honor. Or some cases we've heard in Pakistan, for example, where women tend to be gang raped because of some perceived crime or that one tribe has done to another, and things of that sort.
Yeah, again, you know, I mean, I was dealing up to now with the concept. Now we're going into the practice. Mm-hmm. In practical level, yes, I mean, there are injustices going on. There are many male chauvinists who use Islam as an excuse to be male chauvinists. There are many male chauvinists who use their culture in Africa to be male chauvinists. There are many male chauvinists in the West who are committing male chauvinism. I mean, you know, in Britain right now, there is actually, you know, we all know, although they have all these legislation of equality of sexes when it comes to employment and so forth, women are not paid as much as men are paid. Women actually are deprived in reaching higher standards of employment. You know, the top levels of sort of company directors are very few men. Mm-hmm. You know, when you look, United States has, up to this date, has not even had a president or a vice president a woman. While in Iran, we actually have had vice president, female vice president. There are more women chancellors in Iran and Sudan than at the universities than there are in Britain and the United States. So who is, you know, discriminating where? And you know, when you talk about the issue of rape, there are more men being raped in prisons in the United States than there are women being raped outside. And this is a controlled area. These are men being raped in the prison. This is the most civilized nation. We really need to look at all these aspects. We recently did a research in Britain to look at domestic violence. I mean, it's been said, and it's factual, that domestic violence is actually more ripe when there are financial deprivation in families. So families who are financially less well off are actually have more levels of domestic violence. But even with that, and we know that Muslim families are actually as a whole are lesser well off when it comes to finances. But when we look at the whole ethnic minorities and we compare the level of domestic violence in those families with comparison to the families of the mainstream indigenous population, we see no difference. Mm-hmm. No difference in level of domestic violence. So really, things like that, even in the West and elsewhere, there isn't really any separation. And this study was even done in India. And it was shown that between the Muslim families and Hindu families, there is really no difference. So really, we need to look at these on a cultural level rather than trying to look at it from a Islamic or religious base.
That these activities are taking place on a cultural type of a basis.
Absolutely. And indeed, Islam is a solution to this, because Islam actually doesn't allow this. Mm. Islam actually holds, as we know, the hadith that when someone goes to the Prophet and says, "Who has got more right over me?" The Prophet says, "Your mother." Mm,
right.
And this was repeated 3 times. And then father. So it's been said that the mother has, or a woman or a mother has got 3 times more rights over a child than a father. And you know, there are many other aspects like that, that, you know, women are protected and women are you know, they really in Islam, you know, the concept of forced marriage, it's alien.
Right.
It's something which culturally has been brought in.
I see. Now, you find in the West, especially today in the 21st century, after 9/11, especially, you have a new kind of racism, if you can say so, persecution wave, and it is coming under the whole idea of the war against terror and anti-terror laws and so on. How do these laws stand up, or how does Western human rights, the idea of Western human rights, look at this particular situation that is prevailing today?
Well, I many of us, when we were setting up the IHRC, especially those of us in human rights arena, we were seeing the silver lining in the skies that things for Muslims are getting bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even after downfall of communism, very clearly institutions were saying we need to sort of target Islam and Muslims. They are the next baddies.
Right.
You know?
I remember reading something about the King of Spain or some Spanish person was saying that.
Yeah.
What should NATO do now?
Yeah. And they said NATO should actually divert everything towards Muslim. And Muslim fundamentalists or fanatics, as we've been referred to, had only Kalashnikovs. And, you know, NATO is a nuclear sort of armed forces. Mm-hmm. Why should, you know, these two are not, you know, anywhere compatible or anywhere in the same level. But that was done. And indeed, we saw that process went on and on and on and on. And now, I really can't believe the sort of level of human rights and the concept of civil liberties, the way it has been eroded away. Really, the first casualty of 9/11 has been civil rights and human rights. Because, you know, we look at Abu Ghraib, you look at Guantanamo, you look at the laws that has been changed around the world, you know, it really is unbelievable that, you know, we have actually gone down so far down this road. And now we see the level of demonization of Islam and Muslims is to the extent that, you know, every Muslim is being either targeted as a terrorist or being perceived as a danger, and the more religious it is, the more danger is perceived to be. And the reality is that, you know, far from that, you know, Islam and the concept of justice of Islam is something that actually holds people back. I mean, you know, the way that the Muslims
holds people back from what?
From going to extremes.
I see.
You know, I'll give you an example. The way that the Muslims have been treated on a stop and search in the streets of London. The way that every time they go overseas and they come back, they're stopped and they ask, how many times do you pray during the day?
Mm.
Who did you vote for? And if they don't answer it, they get 3 months imprisonment. And, you know, they've been harassed to that level. If any other community, like the black community, would have been harassed in this sort of level and demonized daily and weekly and monthly on this sort of way, they would have been riots in the street. And indeed, we did have riots in the streets of London and elsewhere by the black community. Muslim community is taking all this. Why because they actually have got principles that they cannot go and attack innocent people
right.
because they're being oppressed
mm-hmm.
by few. And you know, look at the sort of level. I mean, recently I was looking at the statistic of Europol, which is a police that deals with the whole Europe. They did a survey, and they said last year, in the Europe as a whole, there was 597 attacks of terrorism, actual attack of terrorism. And how many of those do you think was committed by Muslims?
598?
One.
One? Or 597?
One uh-huh. was Muslim. The rest of them were non-Muslim. They were
for what period?
Whole year.
Oh, I see. 1 year.
For uh-huh. the whole year.
Right.
Out of 597, there was only one attack by Muslim.
Uh-huh.
The rest of were by others.
Right.
But that's not the sort of news we hear.
Yeah. That's very interesting because even right now I'm thinking, well, what other terrorist groups are there that will do this attack, these types of attacks? And, well, you know, only maybe ETA comes to mind. And I think they're sort of like demobilized now. You know,
ETA was on top of the list
okay,
of the attacks
okay.
in Europe. And there are many others. But you see, the extreme right groups. I'll give you another example. We have had in this country a young lady being taken to court and found guilty of terrorism because she downloaded some materials from YouTube and other publicly available stuff. And she wrote a poem. Glorifying bin Laden.
Mm-hmm.
She was found guilty in court, and eventually there was such an outcry that she was given suspended sentence, and eventually the sentence was that the court in the appeal were actually, they won the case.
Mm-hmm.
But that was on one side. On the other side, we had two men from extreme right-wing group. Who were members of BNP, British National Party, ex-members of British National Party. They were found with rocket launchers, explosive, chemical equipment, suits for nuclear and chemical suits, and bow and arrow, and the list of masajids to attack, and literature that said that they wanted to attack and kill the Prime Minister and Deputy Prime Minister. When they were taken to court, they were not charged under terrorism. They were charged under possession of explosives,
I see.
Which is much lesser charge.
Right.
One of them got 17 months, the other one was found not guilty.
So basically these anti-terrorist laws are actually discriminatory.
They are. I mean,
skewed against the Muslim population.
How could you not even charge them
right.
for acts of terrorism? When they have got target, intention, and material. And then on the other side, we've got the case. I mean, head of the MI5 recently said that they know of 2,000 cases of young British Muslims who are preparing for act of terrorism. But they think that figure is actually 4,000. And you know, when you look at that and you sort of look at the history, since 9/11 up till now, in Britain, only 1,200 people have been arrested under anti-terrorism. Out of those, only 5.6% of them were actually found guilty in the courts. Now, if you know 2,000 people, mm-hmm. why have you not arrested them
right.
and arresting these innocent people?
Right.
And you know, why you have only arrested
yeah.
1,200 if there are 2,000 people there?
Right.
The previous head of MI5 said the future attacks in Britain is going to be biological, chemical, and nuclear, which is going to be coming from radicalized youth. Radicalized 16, 17-year-old cooking up nuclear bombs?
Right.
I mean, this is ridiculous.
Kind of alarmist type of...
If that's the case, all these rogue sort of estates, they should not try to actually have a nuclear bomb. They should just come and recruit youngsters, 16, 17-year-old from massages in Britain. I mean, it's outrageous. Mm. This sort of concept is not even being challenged by anyone.
Now, how would the Islam look at that, the Islamic view on human rights? How would it look at this particular situation? How would it criticize this particular situation?
Well, you see, the concept of Islamic human rights is not based on Asabiya. The concept is
nationalism
or prejudice,
tribalism,
and so forth. As I said, you know, even the murderer of the Amirul Mu'mineen, the Khalifa, has got right in Islam. And then, you know, the right is not specifically for one section of community. Right is for everyone.
Right.
From Islamic point of view, when we talk about human right, we want to increase the right of everyone, so we, as part of everyone, will benefit from it. Mm-hmm. It's not that, you know, we are not like the Zionists, that we, you know, what happened was to the Zionists, they were being sort of prosecuted at certain era of history, and they kept the same structure, and instead of being oppressed, now they're oppressors. We actually want to change the whole system so there will be no oppressor. We stand against any oppression for anyone. We create a better society and justice society for all. And that is actually a concept that we could promote, not just within the Muslim community, but the whole of the mankind. Mm-hmm. The whole of mankind is thirsty for creating a society which is just and comes together against injustice.
So you're claiming actually like then for a universal type of applicability of Islamic human rights.
Yes, I mean what we...
But the question I want to ask you is like, now Western human rights also claim this kind of universality. Are they justified in their claim?
Well, let's see how the universality or universal declaration of human rights came to be. You know, a group of people came together under chairmanship of Madame Roosevelt, the wife of the then President Roosevelt, who known racist, her literature is quite clearly racist, mm-hmm. calling the black community Negroes and niggers, etc. Mm-hmm. To declare this declaration. And this declaration, when it was declared, did not take into account the needs and aspiration of all the world. You know, you cannot have a universality of a concept if we all not sharing and bringing it about.
Right.
You know, for example, at that time, let alone now, there are many religious people, Catholics, you know, the Jewish community, Muslims, none of them were consulted. So the whole thing is a very secular concept. As I said, God does not even come into it.
Right.
Protection of belief doesn't come into it. And many other things doesn't come into it. So it can't be universal. If something is driven or come to, not through the universal agreement, then it cannot be universal. Not five people could come together and actually come with a concept and then force it on everyone else. And then say that it's almost as a religion. I mean, this is the concept now. If you challenge the universality of declaration of human right, it's almost like you have sinned. You know, you have actually, this has become a new religion that, you know, people actually worship. You can't challenge it. You can challenge everything.
You can challenge humanity.
You can challenge religions. Mm-hmm. You can challenge God, but you cannot challenge this concept of universality, which we should do. I mean, I think everything needs to evolve. Everything needs to be taken forward. Religious aspect of not just Muslims, but Catholics and others should be actually taken into account.
Just tell me a little bit more about taking this forward, because we've got 3 more minutes for the show, and I want to know, where do we go from here?
Well, I actually think that we need to bring all different communities. There are a lot of communities in Africa, as I said, I was talking about the women's rights and so forth, who are disillusioned with the concept of universality of human rights. And we need to sit down together and actually come up with a concept which is acceptable to all of us.
And truly universal.
Truly universal. And it has to be universal. Mm-hmm. Because you can't have one set of rights in one part of the world and then another set of rights in another part of the world. That is ridiculous. If something is unacceptable, it should be unacceptable everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I want to thank you for joining us. We have been very, very enlightened by this.
It's my pleasure.
I think it's a we have a long way to go. Do you think?
We have a long way to go, but we have got examples. shining examples in cases of the Prophet ﷺ and the Aimmah and the whole glorious times of beginning of Islam, where we can really be proud of, and we've got a model which we could really move forward and indeed stand up for just and rights of everyone, all those who are oppressed, against the oppressors. And it's a wonderful thing, you know, to do, and really a goal that I think we could all unite.
Are there any other Muslim organizations, human rights organizations among Muslims that are doing the same thing that you're doing?
There are some, and we are trying to actually help and support to bring different groups together and see if we can actually have a sort of a networking right across the globe. And within 2 months, we're going to have a gathering which we are organizing in Malaysia to actually bring different groups together and see if we could work together. And also, we are setting up a course in Britain called Islamic Human Right, and we are hoping that in 2 years' time it's going to be masters. So it's something that we are working to trying to actually establish the concept much more so than it is today.
Well, I'll be definitely monitoring what's happening. It seems to be very exciting. Thank you for joining us on Minbar. Thank you all for joining us as well. And if you have any questions, comments, or criticisms, please don't forget to write us at minbar@presstv.ir. That's minbar@presstv.ir. And until next week, see you same time, same channel on Minbar.